There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You're listening to The Business Breakfast, the bite-sized business breakfast, the best bits from the show and the news agenda this morning. First off, here's our business headlines.
DubaiEye 103.8 Business Headlines.
In association with insurancemarket.ae.
SMEs in the UAE are confident about the prospects for the second half of the year, according to a new study from Mead. More than 60% of those surveyed said that they expected to see at least 20% growth in H2.
The address downtown has reopened 2.5 years after an electrical fire on New Year's Eve.
Sharjah is going to see 3 new eco hotels open this year. Joint ventures between Sharjah Investment and Development and South Africa's Mantis Hospitality.
Middle East Airlines should see net profits rise to $1.3 billion this year. That's up from $1 billion in 2017. It also bucks IATA's global forecast.
Italy's UniCredit and French bank Societe Generale are looking to merge. That's according to people close to the talks. And discussions are said to be at an early stage.
Real estate broker Savills completed its takeover of Clutton's Middle East. The London company is going to retain all of Clutton's regional staff. And Microsoft is buying GitHub, a software developer platform that is now valued in this deal at $7.5 billion. Analysts say it will shift the company's focus from the Windows operating system to developers.
DubaiEye 103.8 Business Headlines.
In association with insurancemarket.ae. Compare insurance for your car, health, home or business with insurancemarket.ae.
First off, new PMI data coming out during the show from Emirates NBD. This is the non-oil private sector. Growth accelerating to a four-month high. And interestingly, business confidence hitting the highest that it has since the series of surveys started in early 2012. Now, Emirates NBD says that that is linked to, and I quote, robust market conditions in Expo 2020. Speaking of confidence, we have also had another survey out this morning suggesting that small and medium businesses are feeling confident about the second half of this year. Malcolm and I, born cynics, were quizzing the man behind that survey, John Emerson, the director of events at Mead, asking, were SMEs really that optimistic?
It is, I would say, cautious optimism. So when you compare the growth statistics with last year's survey, there are slight differences that I think are quite important to point out. So 60% of our audience believe that they will grow between 0 and 20% this year, and that is up on 10% from last year. So that's good. However, at the top end, this year, 13% reckon they'll grow by 50% or more, and that's down by 7%. So I think that people are optimistic. They see growth. But with the various challenges and obstacles that are in their way in the country at the moment, they are a little bit more cautious about their growth prospects.
Before we dig into those numbers, remind us who you spoke to for this.
So at Mead, we run an annual awards program called the Gulf Capital SME Awards with our partners Gulf Capital and Dubai SME. And we've done an annual survey for the past 7 years that taps into that market to understand their thoughts, their feelings, and to try and give them a collective voice to understand what their challenges are and where they see the opportunities.
So how many people have you spoken to?
So it's 75 of the UAE's top SMEs.
Okay, so it is a relatively small sample.
Yes.
Was there any sector trends that came out about how people are feeling about their growth, what sectors they're working in?
So our respondents are across a variety of sectors. The most dominant one would be retail. I think that's where a lot of the SMEs tend to be in this region. However, we had banks, advisory services, lawyers, travel firms, hospitality, energy, oil and gas. So it does cover the wide range of spectrums of the industries you'd expect in this region.
Was there any feeling that one industry was more optimistic than another?
No. So the feeling tended to be across the board, to be honest with you. As I said, retail was the slightly more dominant part. And I think they are slightly more pessimistic than the rest of the industries. But it wasn't a huge trend that I would kind of try and outline.
What was behind those positive numbers for the SMEs? What made them say positive? Was it on the back of really good Q1s? I mean, what did they point to as sort of the bedrock for that belief?
So a range of things. So there is a renewed optimism, I think, especially in the Emirate of Dubai, around opportunities in business at the moment. And I heard you talking about the oil price earlier, and it may well be linked to that. But I think that the implementation of that, although that has caused some challenges, that has been quite an opportunity for some businesses. So we have a lot of accountancy firms and tax firms that are as part of the survey, and obviously that's been good for them. And the laws around that are changing at the end of the year around new ownership, so 100% ownership, although that's a relatively recent thing, I think that's given a lot of people cause for optimism as well. Competitiveness is key to SMEs and driving them to be successful. And if the laws around ownership encourage more new entrants into the sector, then that can only be a good thing for the UAE.
One of the parts of the survey that really stood out for me was how many of the people, not so much even that you spoke to, but that are working in the SMEs that you spoke to, are expats. There seemed to be very low Emirati involvement in the SME sector. I raised an eyebrow at that. There's been so many government initiatives to encourage particularly Emirati startups, Emirati small businesses. There's a whole small business foundation, in fact. What numbers did you see, and why do you think that is?
So, the numbers we saw are in line with the numbers we've seen from the previous 2 years as well. They're almost exactly the same. So 77% of our respondents said that they only had between 0 and 10% of their workforce were local. And at the top end, only 10% of our respondents said that 50% or more of their workforce were local. And we have also seen a trend that there tends to be more Emirati businesses entering our awards programme. And we have indeed launched a new category this year for Emirati Business of the Year to try and encourage even more. I think that it's difficult because I think that the entrepreneurial spirit tends to be one that flows through expats slightly more in the region than it does locals. But I do think there is a shift change that is happening, and I do think we will see those stats rise in the coming years.
Was there a feeling in the SMEs that a finance would be easier to raise in the second half?
So no, I mean, there were two huge barriers to entry. For SMEs and startups. One was the ownership model and the difficulty in kind of setting up businesses, getting your trade licenses, etc. And the other one was the ability to raise funding. And there is certainly an overwhelming feeling across all of our respondents that the cost of getting funding and the accessibility of it is still very challenging to a lot of them.
You asked them about VAT as well. What do people tell you about the impact of VAT on their businesses?
Hugely mixed results, to be perfectly honest with you. So 40% were unsure about its impact. They said it was too early to say. 11% said that they felt that it was better, and that they tended to be respondents from the financial sectors, so, you know, the ones that have benefited from that implementation. 31% said it was worse, and then 19% said there was no effect at all. However, the messages that were coming through were an overwhelming sense that there had not been enough strong advice from the government on how to implement it. The laws have been quite confusing, and that it's cost them a lot of time in terms of money on advisory and money spent in terms of trying to work out what they're doing that has had a negative effect on the rest of their business.
Which kind of makes you question a little bit the optimism, because you mentioned that one of the reasons they're optimistic is the potential for 10-year visas for 100% ownership of companies. And yet, what will be allowed to be owned 100% and about these two will qualify for these 10-year visas is far from clear yet. The optimism is based on something which we're just not sure about.
Yeah, and that's why I used the term cautious optimism. Yeah. So people are saying, yeah, this is great that these changes are happening, but we need more information.
So they're not sure about the future, and finance is difficult to raise. Yeah.
But I mean, finance has been difficult to raise for as long as we've been doing this. So that hasn't really changed, and people are still able to access it.
And also, I guess, you probably, as an SME, if you weren't positive about your business, you'd pull the shutters down, wouldn't you? So you've got to be. You've got no choice but to be positive.
Exactly. I mean, you don't have as the flexibility of the big corporates to kind of go, yeah, okay, well, we're going to have a bad year. If you have a bad year in SME, then you're toast, aren't you? So
James has actually texted in, and he is a CEO here in Dubai, to say that he thinks, his opinion, is that the VAT and the information on the VAT tax returns will actually make bank financing easier, because the banks will have more information about your businesses between both the VAT and the Etihad Credit Bureau reports, that it could end up being positive for the financing situation.
Certainly the more transparency that banks have about how businesses operate, the more likely they are to approve loans. I'm not a finance expert, so it's difficult for me to comment with any kind of knowledge on that, to be perfectly honest with you.
Reading the survey, I didn't actually sort of see the words Expo 2020 cropping up very much. Was there any mention of that as positive?
Not a single mention.
No.
Not a single one.
Surprising?
Yeah, I think that is surprising. There was last year. So I read through all of the responses this morning, and no, not single reference to Expo 2020. And I'm not sure whether that's because we're either too late or too early. We're in that kind of down period where the construction is happening, but then the real work happens in 6 months' time. That could be the reason. Especially as far as SMEs are concerned.
Cash flow, final question from me. What do people have to tell you about whether they're getting paid or not?
So one of the questions we ask in the survey is what is the main challenges you face when trying to run an SME in the UAE? And cash flow was by far and away the biggest response. A lot of people comment on lessons learned about investing too heavily in fancy offices, too many staff, growing too quickly. And a lot of those are linked to their ability to pay their staff and their suppliers and their ability to access the money that they have been promised by their clients. It's a huge issue. It's a huge issue, not just for SMEs. I think it's a huge issue for everyone around the region. It's, as you were saying earlier, the laws and the rules around people paying seem to be slightly different in the region than they are perhaps in other places around the world. And that's something that the UAE government really needs to look at.
John Emerson, Director of Events at Mead, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
This is the Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
Apple getting a new operating system by the end of the year, and they're going to add a lot of features designed to basically thwart the use of secret trackers to try and monitor our online activities. We'll be able to, if you like, drop out a lot more, but also try and cure people of smartphone addiction. A lot of features being added to limit distractions from iPhones, including being able to turn off the lock screen notifications so that you're not notified. For instance, you want to look at the time, you press the thing, at the moment you see you've got emails or messages, and you'll want to go off and check that. You'll be able to sort of get rid of all those from the home screen. And they say that because we're becoming so addicted to our smartphones, they now realise that it benefits them for us perhaps to use less of the smartphone, but in a more qualitative way.
I'm thinking that they're seeing lawsuits in the future, to be honest. I see this as a preemptive strike. The feature that interested me the most was this dashboard for iPhones and iPads that Apple is coming up with, which will show you how long you've spent on your phone, how long you've spent on different apps, and also how many times you pick up and unlock your device. You can already find out some of those things, but you have to go way into the settings to have a look at them. This is going to be a lot more prominent. Do you think it will put you off?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I use my phone a lot. I pick up my phone, two, three times a day, something like that. I mean, you know.
There's not a lot in the grand scheme of things, Taylor.
I understand that. I don't know. But, you know, they've said that they are going to help us to use the Do Not Disturb a lot more. And that's what they're expecting. I don't know. Are you addicted?
No, but I have done a couple of things recently to kind of lower my phone use just so I can be a lot more productive and get other things done. No, I've done what, because Google came out with some similar moves to Apple a few weeks ago. And one of the things that they have brought in is a little button that will turn your screen to grayscale. Now, again, you can already do this on most phones, but you have to go into the settings and mess around with it. And there's been studies that show that if you really want to cut down your screen time, put it on grayscale, because it just becomes completely boring. Everything is grey and white. Photos, everything else, totally makes social media a really dull experience.
Let me understand this correctly. So that we are moving forward in our use of iPhones, we now want to watch black and white photographs and movies. Is that right?
I know. Wonderful. It's ironic, isn't it?
Just to say that sort of how important this business is for Apple. Apple Chief Executive Tim Cook said that the app ecosystem, which is 10 years old in July, is beyond remarkable, were his words. He said that the ecosystem for apps developed by Apple will soon have delivered more than $100 billion to those app creators.
Yeah, it's a rock and a hard place, I think, for smartphone companies. They're looking down the line. They don't want any class action lawsuits. But at the same time, you're right, apps are, and development is where they make their money. I mean, it's one of the reasons that Microsoft's paying, as we heard this morning, around $7.5 billion for a development platform. I was looking, though, at what Simon Cowell is doing, as you do.
What, hosting game shows?
Not using his phone. He's 10 months clean off his phone now. Clean and sober from his phone. Simon Cowell says he just doesn't use it anymore. He got to the stage where he was feeling really antisocial. He felt he wasn't engaging with people. He'd become the person in meetings who's on their phone and not listening to what's going on. So he's just stopped using it. And he says that he's got better relationships with people as a result. He says it's good for his mental health. And I thought, that's all very well and good if you're Simon Cowell and you're sort of capital F famous, but for the rest of us...
who don't have five people following us around every day.
Answering our phone calls and our emails on our behalf, absolutely. It would be hard. I mean, I don't think we could get rid of ours. I couldn't get rid of mine. No, I'd be uncontactable for work.
I think you'd be sort of accused of abdication.
I'm pretty sure it's a sackable offence.
Yeah.
This is The Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
We know about the glass ceiling that has always restricted how high women can go in companies and on boards. But this morning I've heard about the concrete floor. The concrete floor is the idea that once women break through the glass ceiling and you get a higher number of women on boards or in government, that glass ceiling then becomes the concrete floor. The numbers don't often relapse to what they were before. That glass ceiling is also... The downward limit. I know I'm not explaining this very well, but you understand what I mean, do you? The more you push, the greater the opportunities for women, and it stays that way to a large degree.
This is The Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
Other interesting news coming out this morning from the National Media Council. The influencer licences that we've been speaking about in some depth across Dubai Eye 103.8, I know that not just The Business Breakfast, but The Agenda has been looking at it in detail, the fact that influencers now need to get a licence. There's not just going to be one category, there's going to be three. The individual licence that we knew about, 15,000 dirhams, but also a partnership licence if groups or companies want to come in together. You do have to set up as a company though. And also an agency's licence, which is interesting. Only one has been approved, and that is for VAMP, which is Motivate's media company that looks after influencers. We know that ITP, Motivate and others have moved into this space. Motivate, interestingly, Gulf Business is the one who has led with this news this morning. Not surprisingly, they've obviously got the inside scoop there. They are the only official influencer platform so far, but what it means is that instead of getting your own license, if you are signed up with VAMP, or presumably one of the other agencies that will follow, you can just use their license. So it's sort of an umbrella system, which I can see as being a lot easier for influencers.
This is The Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
One story I'm liking is the structure of shopping centres. It's a UK story, but I think it has relevance in this part of the world. They've seen the big malls get bigger. The smaller shopping malls are struggling. And why is that? It's because people want to be in the bigger malls, and they're offering other things. They're offering a lot more entertainment, a la Dubai style-y. But they're also seeing, if you look into the sort of people that are in the malls, barbershops, beauty salons, they were the biggest sector by openings. Something like 2,000 barbers have opened their doors over the last year or so. There's been 1,235 more coffee shops, 2,000 more vaping shops. What are they, by the way, Brandy?
Vaping is when you're smoking without smoking. You know, you've got the liquid
electronic,
and you've got the special sort of, I want to call it a pipe, it's not really a pipe.
But these sort of shops are the ones that you can't do online. So pick a good idea if you're going to open a business. Also, restaurants, we're moving to more exotic things. Jamaican, Brazilian, Argentinian restaurants increased. The number of sort of mainline restaurants decreased. But vegan outlets rose by 61% at the expense of vegetarian restaurants, which fell by 70%. I suppose there's a correlation there that people who previously went to a vegetarian would now be going to a vegan. So, but those are the sort of three things. Vegan outlets, things that you can't do online, such as hair salons, and also more exotic restaurants.
This is The Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
The Emirates Cricket Board and OPI Sports have now announced plans for a new 2020 league here in the UAE. And we were very pleased to be joined this morning by Salman Salwar Butt, the CEO of OPI Sports. The competition is going to include five franchises, 22 matches played over 24 days in Dubai, Sharjah and Abu Dhabi. And we asked Salman, what more could he tell us about the new cricket tournament?
First of all, this is an asset being built for the UAE, and this will be an international level T20 event. It will compete against the best T20s in the market, and we will have international players from all over the world. And this has a very this has a development agenda that is tied to it.
The development being what? The development of Emirati cricketers?
Correct.
How many of those are coming through at the moment?
So we'll have about 15 national team cricketers playing. And other than that, we also...
But the national team cricketers are largely sort of Pakistani and Indian, aren't they? And what about Emirati cricketers? Has it taken any grassroots hold yet?
That's the objective. So the objective is to actually encourage the sport in the country and give a pathway to Emiratis and to others who want to play cricket in the UAE.
Well, I called it an idea at the start. I mean, how concrete are the plans?
Well, it's concrete. We have already started to access players and build our player pool. We've built the entire financial feasibility. We're on it in terms of its marketing, etc. So it's pretty much concrete. In the next few months, you will start seeing the output.
I mean, you said you've got the plans in place, but no guaranteed finance yet.
Well, the financing comes from selling the commercial rights, and we will be selling commercial rights in the next 3 months. But we have seed capital, so that financing is there.
And it's going to be, as I mentioned there, sort of December, January, I believe?
Correct.
And is it sanctioned by the ICC and also the national cricket federations around the world?
Yes. So this is... every tournament done by an associate of this nature has to be sanctioned by the ICC. This tournament has been sanctioned by the ICC. It's been licensed. And we've been given the license for it for 10 years.
So are we likely, these are going to be local, what, Emirates, local towns? What are we going to be seeing? Sort of the Al Ain Sunrisers or the...
Yeah, but the idea is... The idea is
Night Risers, Sharjah.
The idea is to have five franchises linked to the Emirat. And we're still in the process of finalizing if we can have the names of the Emirat embedded in the team names.
And is it... who gives a permission for that?
There is a Ministry of Youth and...
And they have to give you permission for your proposals.
Yes.
At the moment, though, it's going to be taking place in Abu Dhabi, as I understand, Sharjah and Dubai. So you would hope to have at least those three on board, plus two others. Which are the most likely Emirates to join in?
So it's Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Sharjah.
Yep.
And then we have Ras Al Khaimah and Ajman.
And Ajman, those are the five. Okay.
You're looking at me like I might know something about cricket.
Brandy, if Brandy asks you a question about cricket, what are the rules? Could you kindly explain the sort of why we play for 5 days and there's no results? The key thing about your T20 is it doesn't take very long. How long does a T20 game take?
Well, a total of 3.5 hours with breaks and everything. So it's a good entertainment platform for people to come and enjoy. The other thing we want to do is build this as a festival. So it's been called the Festival of Cricket because basically we're looking at people coming in and enjoying not just the cricket but the atmosphere around it as well.
And in fact, that is the only thing I do know about T20. I know the fantastic ad campaigns that come out, the television ads that come out from India. People discuss the ads like they're almost a television program in themselves. How are you going to build that kind of hype here in Dubai?
Well, I mean, we've already started. I mean, the fact that I'm sitting here in front of you is part of that. There is an entire PR plan that's going to go all the way from here till the end of the tournament. So that one, then we're going to go out and, as we sell the commercial rights and bring sponsors on board and all that, especially the franchise owners, they start building their own hype and all of that. So you'll see a lot of that coming across in the next few months.
How do you think this is going to work? I mean, people who watch the IPL or the PSL, there's a certain regional or city allegiance that people, if you're from that region, you're more than likely to support that particular team.
Yeah.
How are you seeing this working, that people who live in Sharjah will support Sharjah, Dubai, etc.? How do you see this working?
So primarily, what happens when you launch a tournament like this, especially in an associate country, the allegiance is more towards players. So we are trying to build in every team a flavor of a particular part of the world. So Australia, New Zealand.
Okay. So which team is going to be Australia, New Zealand?
So we're going
to allocate
team,
players. Malcolm Taylor.
We're going to allocate players to icons, to particular teams. There are five teams, and each one of them will have their own flavor. We haven't yet decided which team will be Australia, New Zealand, or which team will be, say, India or South Africa and the Caribbeans.
There has been an issue here with football, getting expats into the stand to support local football teams. We haven't seen the numbers, basically, that we would like to. We haven't sort of seen the adoption of local teams in the way that we would like to.
Yeah.
How come you think you can do it?
The adoption of team comes a little later. I guess, you know, like I said, first the fans will adopt the players. They follow the players, and then after that, once you give it a few years, and then they start owning the teams. Some of the developed leagues also in the world, cricket leagues, are still you know, in the phase of getting people to own the teams. People are still following players. So that's where we start from. And over a period of time, we want a lot of engagement by the franchise within every Emirat. So, for example, a Dubai franchise will start engaging through cricket, through grassroots cricket development within Dubai, and get that following.
What are you hoping for in the way of TV coverage? Obviously, the IPL massive in India, PSL massive around the region. What are you hoping for in the way of TV footprint?
Our television rights are going to be sold internationally and locally. So we are looking at coverage of this tournament, not just here, but around the world, wherever cricket is played and followed. And our broadcast strategy is based on that. We also have a digital strategy that, you know, in this
watch
day
online.
And age.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, the Pakistan Super League ran this year from 22nd of Feb to 25th of March. And there are some suggestions that the IPL game, some of them might be played here in the UAE next year because avoiding clashing with Indian elections. Mm. I mean, how do you assess the appetite and depth of pockets of punters here in the UAE to cope with three 2020 contests in quick succession?
Our event, correct. I mean, there is a lot of cricket being played here. And in this year, this coming year in particular, there will be IPL coming over as well. And the Afghanistan League is being played in October, as we hear.
So that would be Afghanistan League here in October. You at the sort of turn of the year.
Yeah.
Then Pakistan, then India. So four correct competitions in correct quick succession.
Yes. But, you know, our league is different in a way that we are actually looking to. We are here. We are learning about the lay of the land, and we're looking to engage a much larger population across.
I guess the question is really that you're aiming at the same market, aren't you? And the players, there's only so many players to go around. Are you going to be sort of duplicating the same players that are in the IPL, the PSL as well?
Well, we will be going for the top players. So yes, some of the players playing in the IPL and the PSL will play here as well. But we are also targeting a large number of associate country players. And in particular, we're looking at the under-23s and the under-19s. And that's the global development agenda which we're following.
And what about Africa? You didn't mention Africa there in that list. Because I mean, you've got some good up-and-coming teams.
Absolutely.
From East Africa.
Yes, we have. Well, I mean, you know, we have South Africa, we have Zimbabwe, we have, you know, we'll be targeting that region in itself, including the Caribbeans, will form a very, very exciting part of our tournament.
We look forward to having you back in the studio when there are more details to
sure
be shared. Salman Butt, the CEO of OPI Sports, thank you very much indeed for coming in and sharing details of the new Emirates Cricket Board and OPI Sports tournament here. What is the official title, by the way?
We'll unveil that on the 27th of June.
We look forward to that. Thank you very much for joining us.
You've been listening to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Have a great day.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.